So that's where I think the real treat is when it comes to having your immediate market right outside your front door. And that's tough to beat when you look at both the access to expertise and the willingness for fostering ag tech companies.
Welcome to Startup Build, the show where we discuss what it's like to build a tech startup and a startup ecosystem in a small city. I'm your producer, Ariel Delorier. Our host is Mike Wolsfeld, and today we're joined by the co-founder and CEO of Dark Horse Egg Ventures, Tyler Leffley. Dark Horse Egg Ventures took home the grand prize at Cool Launch X Finale and has been accepted into the second cohort of Cultivators Egg Tech Accelerator, which is launching this week in Regina, Saskatchewan. Dark Horse Egg Ventures developed a precision egg platform to address the struggles farmers and agronomy businesses have collecting and processing data with the backing of acclaimed experts in digital egg and crop science. We chat with Tyler about connecting the dots in the egg industry, leveraging universal layers of data to make scalable products that they can apply globally, and their experiences going through a couple of Saskatchewan's Incubator Accelerator programs. Welcome to Startupville. The Startupville podcast is brought to you by Innovation Saskatchewan.
Tyler Leffley of Dark Horse Egg Ventures, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into Dark Horse and the company in itself, tell me a little bit about you. How did you get into the egg space? What's the Tyler origin story?
Oh boy, origin story. It's kind of crazy thinking that I went to do my egg degree. I loved biology and chem in high school, and as well had family farm or extended family farms that really enjoyed my time there growing up. I thought I was going to be in the oil field doing reclamation work in Alberta or in the mountains. And once the oil crashed halfway through that degree, switched over to plant genetics and essentially did two capstone projects to prove that I could do a master's for plant sciences. Carried on with that and honestly fell back on my egg degree after finishing my master's because gene editing was kind of not mainstream. So yeah, everything just kind of fell back on that in terms of like origin story of how I've more or less gotten to where I am today.
That's interesting. So you and I have something in common. I also went into to university thinking I was getting into the oil and gas mining sector, graduated during the crash. So that's how I ended up in tech, and I'm glad I'm in here. So, and we're glad that this turn of events ended up with you in the ag tech space as well. So tell me more about Dark Horse Egg. What's the company? What do you guys do? Give me the quick elevator pitch.
Oh yeah, for sure. So essentially Dark Horse Egg is a precision agriculture technology company that specializes in something called variable rate. And so through mapping nutrient use efficiency and water use efficiency, we've married them together to create something that is able to produce real-time nutrient recommendations and as well the zones that those recommendations get applied to. And so this is no longer something that is the static map that everyone does variable read off of. We're doing real-time now. So that's where Dark Horse comes into action.
That's awesome. So are you on the field working with farmers now with your technology?
Yeah, so we're doing a lot of product demos coming up. So, of course, we'll not in the field, I guess, this winter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, even past, I was a consulting agronomist as well. So that's where I got a lot of my boots on the ground experience in that aspect for what can be improved with this type of technology and where we're going. Because a static map, how is that going to adapt to changes in moisture? And it hasn't been able to until, I guess, what we got going on now. I think other people have modeled the water, but it's just a matter of also modeling and creating that real-time aspect of those recommendations.
Mm-hmm. So the real-time recommendation thing being the real game changer here, I think you have a really interesting and unique perspective in the startup space. I mean, encounter a lot of entrepreneurs and startups that are looking to innovate in the ag space, not always from an ag background though, right? And so you're coming from a place where, you have some background in ag and agronomy, you're working with farmers in the field. If you could kind of summarize, like, quickly, like, what is, you know, what is the big reason for sort of the marriage of technology and insights in the field here? Because I know sometimes we can just, you know, throw a layer of technology over top of things and, you know, try and sell that to farmers who are out there every day. And they go, you know what, this isn't super useful for me. What's sort of the key that makes this, you know, a big difference maker for the farmers that you're working with?
Mm-hmm. So the big difference maker here is that it's a matter of connecting the dots. And that's a very difficult thing to do. Or a skill to have in the ag industry from what I've seen and what my peers have seen as well. And that's where it comes from. I think in my experience, I kind of have a special ability in that aspect because I've done gene editing, reproductive biology, the hardcore, you know, agronomy, soil science degree background. Now I'm actually doing my PhD where I'm breeding triticale to be on West. And so I just kind of followed all the way from the lab to the field. I've been able to connect a lot of dots and being able to know what farmers want out of that. There's a matter of generalization where I think a lot of people that don't have the ability to connect those dots and generalize a lot of concepts struggle with adoption and getting that technology on the farm because it's too intricate and a lot of things, you know, they don't have to be there. It can be as simple as one click of a button instead of having to be an hour process of reading a manual.
Cool. So I'd love to hear more about sort of the grand vision. I mean, in Canada, we talk a lot about broadacre farming. That's kind of the big thing here. You know, obviously there's agriculture all over the world. You know, a lot of companies that we work with, you know, try and build globally competitive ag businesses. Is this something that can apply to different types of farming, or is it more specific to kind of the Canadian landscape and how we do it here?
It's actually like not geographically limited with what we're doing because of how we're doing it. And we're using a layer of a map layer that farmers produce around the world. It's called yield data. That creates yield maps. And it's the second most adopted precision ag technology out there behind AutoSteer and GPS. And every new combine has it as a standard feature. So we are really leveraging this universal layer of data to fuel our entire ecosystem of products that we've created. And from that, that makes it now a scalable product, independent product, and both product ecosystem that, you know, we can globally apply. Because when you look at row crops, yes, they are universal. You can, you know, wheat's produced in all many countries around the world. It's just a matter of, I think, going beyond row crops. That's where, you know, there will be some more research and development on that aspect, but right now we're staying in our lane on row crops as a startup. It's a real, it's a matter of focus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And obviously Canada is a great place to focus early because there's just so much of it going on. So switching gears a little bit more to the entrepreneurship side of your story, you recently participated in the CoLaunch X cohort from CoLabs, and CoLabs is or Innovation Saskatchewan is obviously great, a proud supporter of CoLabs and their programs. And I know this new CoLaunch X cohort, they changed up a few things. Tell me a little bit about your experience going through that program. I guess start with, you know, you get that acceptance email, you're in the program, how do you feel about it? And tell me about what it was like kind of going through this newly adapted program for early stage startups.
Yeah, for sure. So I do not have like any real information of how they changed it up, 'cause I don't have like previous experience from, you know, past programs. So that's with putting that aside, the CoLabs program, man, that pushed me. I came in and I was about as much as of a rookie you could get when it comes to entrepreneurship and getting a matter of my ideas simplified. Cause I think that's something that where I was having to transfer literally my way of thinking in academia going to the farmer and then finding a happy medium when it comes to presenting at Colabs. And I was doing that all within, you know, a matter of hours. And it took a lot of calibration and obviously work when it came down to it. And the coaches that they have really pushed you. Like, I wasn't spending, you know, 1 to 3 hours a week on this stuff. This was almost like a part-time job when it came down to nailing the, I guess, basics, and then working on the fundamentals, because I think a lot of the work, you got put in the work as just part of it. And even if I didn't get the results, which obviously was a treat winning, because it's a really good feeling when all that hard work pays off. But even if I ended up, you know, being a runner up or even further, getting cut in the first or second round of the overall cohort, then you come away with a lot of learning. And it's just a matter of picking up where you left off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you went through this program, kind of learned how to nail the basics of being a startup founder, found success in there, obviously, won some prize money at the finale pitch competition. Now you're involved in a new program, noticed with Cultivator and their ag tech accelerator. Tell me what that experience is like, and tell me what is kind of like the next stage for Dark Horse Ag that you're looking to get out of a program like this, to kind of level up what you learned, from the co-launch cohort.
Yeah, for sure. So it's been obviously a treat to get to go from Colabs and then go into the AgTech Accelerator. But even before that, actually, in October, we were part of Cultivator's START program. Mm. And so when you're talking about putting in the work and a matter of, you know, seeing the results, we did not place it all in terms of the Cultivator START program. So we just kept on working and working and going through Colabs. And now I think that work is definitely showing when it comes to the AgTech Accelerator. And it's an awesome feeling to be recognized within, you know, the top 16 companies that a lot of people believe in terms of the technology and the scalability. So when it comes to the accelerator, I think it will really help us when it comes to scaling our product. Like, everything's automated behind the scenes. Now it's a matter of building it, because there's been a lot of proof of concept and hammering away on independent products. And we got some extra bells and whistles on top of our main technology. So now it's a matter of scaling. And I think that's obviously going to be a big part when the coaching comes in at AgTech Accelerator. And as well, with recent news about SVB, now I'm stuck reading, you know, all these books behind me in terms of looking at venture capital strategies and further making sure that our team is in place to be able to go after building this platform that we have.
Yeah, that was an interesting curveball thrown us. So for context on the recording, this will be released about a week after we're recording, but yeah, this is the Monday after the Friday in which Silicon Valley Bank was folded by the FDIC and is going to have ripple effects across the venture capital and startup ecosystem. Obviously a different kind of effect in Canada, but will still potentially affect the fundraising and ability for growth here. So one of the things I'd love to touch on is one of the greatest challenges that in ag tech from founders I've talked to is the seasonal sales cycle. So we're in March here, we're headed into the spring. I'd love to learn like what you're kind of looking forward to as farmers kind of hit the fields again. Is this another, you know, build and refine, you know, get some product in farmers' hands and beta test some things? Or are you looking to kind of hit the ground and get some sales and start to scale things up this summer? Or are you going to look at fundraising? I'd love to see how kind of where you're headed going into the growing season this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's almost like a trifecta approach, because now I think a lot of ag tech, based on where things have gone with a lot of these giants in the ecosystem, and there's a lot of trust that has been burned when it comes to dealing with farmers and ag tech. So it's a matter of rebuilding that trust. And that's where it's like, okay, we're not going to go and, you know, full force sleds here. It's about building up the trust. Because when a farmer has a product that they trust and they know they can depend on, that's when you have the repeat sales cycle. So strategy number one, we're doing a lot of product demos. Like if there's farmers out there, we're ready to do three fields when it comes to using our nutrient efficiency maps, you know, just to see them get a feel for it and let them know what they think, and then, you know, revisit them later when it comes to sampling in the fall, or even other agronomists that want to test things out. So we have channel partners. So our go-to-market is being through consulting agronomists more actively, because obviously they deal with a lot more acres than a single farmer. But we're definitely willing to, or we are dealing with both. So when it comes to that, like the tech is there, we've proven it. We already have maps from this past year as well. And a lot of our data is based off the farm, and we look at historic trends. And so it's not like it's a one-off map that's, you know, going to have significant correction. This is based off like historic data. And that data tells the stories when you look at there's power in numbers. More repetitions you have, the better. And so just look at that in terms of history.
Right.
So, yeah, when it comes to fundraising, that'll be later in the summer, going into the fall here. And so right now it's a matter of actually switching our strategies, because everyone's done their plans for seeding pretty much. If you are, then you're kind of hitting the panic button and you don't want to talk to them. And that means we got to focus our shift in terms of sales marketing to fungicide applications for variable rate maps. In terms of seasonality in North America, that is something we want to address by going international. So we're looking for doing demo maps in Australia, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, and just other areas of the world that have different cropping seasons than us. And so that's how we are buffering risk. But of course, there's language barriers that we're looking to address there and fill those gaps.
Awesome. So you mentioned two things that I'd love to touch on some more, explore a little deeper. Is one is that trust element, and the other in expanding internationally and engaging with other regions. So, and I think they go hand in hand, right? I mean, I've talked to farmers before, even early adopting farmers that have been early to bring in new technologies to their operations. And you mentioned it as well, is they've been burned in the past, right? Is, you know, sort of, other products that are, you know, they put a layer of technology over something that, you know, is maybe easier done, you know, with boots on the ground or other things like that, that are really just sort of a superfluous, you know, pretty little doodad that doesn't, you know, meaningfully impact a farmer's time or production resources. So tell me about how you're going about solving that problem of trust and building trust with the farmers and the agronomists, and then maybe expand on that in looking to other regions. You know, you got language barriers, cultural barriers, you know, maybe different ways entirely that farms are operated. How are you going about sort of solving this trust problem with potential customers?
Yeah, for sure. So I think part of the trust is A, does it line up agronomically? And then B, is it cost efficient? It makes sense. Is it, you know, simple, quick, accessible to the farmer? Because you need those two things to make sense in terms of, yes, I'll purchase this product for my farm. All of our products, very cost efficient. It's crazy to think like 9-10 years ago, guys were charging, you know, $3 an acre for yield cleaning. We're charging 50 cents with an added bonus of correcting it with satellite imagery. It's just a matter of how the industry has developed over the years, honestly. But when it comes to building that trust agronomically, our products do line up, because we actually work in a bit of a different way. So our philosophy is that a lot of the industry is measuring independent factors that correlate to yield. We work in reverse. So we're dealing with yield exclusively, and working backwards in that aspect. And so when you're looking at agronomically checking out, yield is what you're marketing, yield is what you're taking off the field, yield is what's in those the data points in that harvester that it's collecting. And it's farmer owned. You can't, something that's more scalable and simple as that. I think it's definitely the easiest way to go, and it makes the product overall cost efficient due to less intensive resources being dedicated to it.
Right. Yeah. And on the cost efficiency piece, you mentioned something interesting there that, you know, a lot of founders struggle with is pricing their product. You mentioned, you know, you're charging 50 cents an acre for a product or a service that farmers are used to paying $3 for. Mm-hmm. I'd love to learn more about how you arrived at that number and how you're kind of approaching pricing moving forward to make sure that you're, you know, striking that balance between, you know, maximizing your own margin, your own returns, while still adding value and ROI for the farmers and still making it that that of course decision for the farmers, right? Where, you know, of course I would go with this because I'm getting more for less. Let's learn more about how you're approaching that.
Yeah, for sure. And so at the end of the day, I think a lot of preaching has been done when it comes to product pricing. You want to have your price set at what is it? I believe a 10x factor in terms of the actual benefit. Farmers usually like to, they're a bit different. So if something, it comes back to cost return ratios for them, and they're actually a fair bit lower than a lot of like B2B SaaS products out there. And so it's a bit different. And that's where the experience comes in from the consulting side of things. Cause as well, you know, we've done our research with even other competitors and agronomy businesses throughout Western Canada, to a point where we've got it fairly narrowed down in terms of having a competitive product on the market. And as well, by having a competitive product on the market, we've added more bells and whistles to it. So when it comes down to the pricing, farmers like to deal with anywhere from a 3-to-1 is their lowest return to cost ratio. So if they're spending $2, they want a minimum of $6 back. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking at that, we've actually more or less blown that out of the water. And so I think that's part of where it builds more of the trust, mm-hmm, and the fact that this is scalable. Yeah. And so that's my opinion looking at it as well. You know, we have our senior advisors on our team too, that have been in the industry collectively over 80 years and high positions with Bayer and even the AgriTrend Agronomy Network. So yeah, there's a lot of background experience running creating the clockwork here.
Awesome. And you've given me the perfect segue into my last question here is on that network, on those advisors, the people who understand this industry inside and out. I'd love to get your thoughts on building this company in Saskatchewan and what you think are the advantages of you building this company at an early stage in this province, and then for the next stages of the business and scaling things up.
In terms of Saskatchewan, obviously it's the largest base of farmland in Canada here. And so that's where I think the real treat is when it comes to having your immediate market right outside your front door. And that's tough to beat when you look at both the access to expertise and the willingness for fostering ag tech companies from both industry, VCs, doesn't matter, you know, even government. But it's just a matter of, you know, finding those connections. And it's great to be honestly one of probably the best agriculture colleges in Canada here in terms of resources. So there's no sort of shortage of help just around the corner. It's just a matter of you gotta be willing to, you know, knock on the door and make people, I guess, earn their pay. Professors aren't there just to sit on their computer all day kind of deal.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, you know, at Startup Phil here on the podcast, we're all about connecting people, all about expanding those networks. And on that note, we'll close things off today, but we always like to make sure that people can get in touch with our guests that are on the show. So Tyler, how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in reaching out?
Yeah, for sure. So we have Twitter, we got LinkedIn as well. You can check out our website, dhadventures.com, and get in contact with myself or my co-founder, Garrett, from there.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Startupville is brought to you by Innovation Saskatchewan, helping grow the tech sector in our province and beyond. Our show is produced by me, Ariel Delorier, and our host, Mike Wolfsfeld. Our theme music is from GG Riggs and Reactor Productions. Learn more about us and our guests at innovationsask.ca/startupville. Don't forget to review wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us rise up the ranks. See you next time on Startupville.